Chapter 81. Lysander. Parting of the Shadow. 406 peerless knights of the Rim kneel in the wheat fields west of Plutus. The knights are as old as 120 and as young as 16. Some came from bunkers burrowed across Io, or from the cells beneath Plutus, or from smaller moons, having fled Far's army, but most came from Ganymede. They left behind the safety of its orbital shields to honour my call to arms. 1,100 knights of the corps joined them in the sacred rite. After the ritual, we will flow up into the ships that wait beyond Plutus's life-abiding pulse bubble. Then on to Europa and battle against the creme of Far's host. The climax to Atlas's play draws near, and I ache to be done with it. An ancient Ganymedean with a face like a mallet stands from his knee and bellows,
"I fear that I shall never banish my shame. I fear that when I die, all my granddaughters will remember of me is that I hid behind Ganymede's shields while Io and Callisto burned."
He sinks back to his knee. The Rim Dwellers call the ritual the Parting of the Shadow, or the Expiation of Fear. First performed by Akari and his bosom companions before they put themselves into tubes and launched themselves down at Earth. Since we do not believe in gods, the confession is dedicated to our ancestors, though I know they do not hear us in the void, and that we speak only to make ourselves brave and hone our intentions before battle. The importance of Gaia's invitation to partake in the rite is impossible to ignore. No knights of the corps have taken part in the ritual since the Dark Revolt. Atlas was right. Nothing makes people fall apart like fear, or come together like hope. That hope for the Rim is me, my fleet, my knights who sailed here with the virtues of the conquerors in their hearts. I feel heady with momentum. I am impatient to send the obsidians reeling from the Rim and out of my life. I shudder to think of what might be happening back home. Yet I allow myself this moment of satisfaction. The battle will be a formality, though I am the only one in the field today who knows that. A 19-year-old Olympic athlete from Ganymede, famous for her prowess in the javelin and the pancration, rises with severe dignity and shouts,
"I fear I will run if death is certain, that I will break before the common grey falls back in retreat, that my body is greater than my will, and my station greater than I deserve."
She sinks back to her knee. Cicero stands to my direct right, a look of profound importance gripping his face. Kneeling at the head of the ceremony with me, Gaia, the legates of Ganymede, and my own army, he scans through the ranks of Peerless, tears in his eyes.
"Though this cause is worthy, I fear that I will perish out here in the dark, that I will never feel the kiss of Sol upon my face again."
He falls to a knee. Lit by the light of the garter's artificial suns, his armour burnished to a mirror-like sheen, he is the picture of a holy warrior. Gaia rises. Her wizened face would be comical peeking out from her armour, were it not so twisted by hate.
"I fear that even in victory we have lost the future. I fear our people, already sailing into darkness, will never be found nor liberated. I fear they will endure forever in bondage."
She sinks back to a knee. There's a pause, the longest of the ritual, before another stands. A half hour and nearly 100 admissions later, a silence falls on the gathering. It is not mandatory to speak, but it is seen as bad form for a commander of my stature to not participate. It reeks of pride. I stand and stare at the faces of my people and wish I could speak honestly. I fear Adelantia. I fear crossing Cassius again one day. I fear Darrow causing mischief back home. I fear my own weakness. I fear Atlas and his wrath. I fear his presence almost as much as I feared his absence. He is due back today, before we sail. I fear he failed in his mission. I fear he will have succeeded. That a weapon powerful enough to make Mars surrender in a week will fall into his terrible hands. I fear that I will never be anything more than his puppet. Most of all, I fear my own concessions will come back to haunt me, that I will be laid bare before these people as a fraud.
I fear the chaos of these 10 years will leak from this decade to stain the centuries to come. I fear Pandora's box is opened. I fear gold's division, I say instead.
It is true enough, at any rate.
I fear that this unity, so hard in coming, will last only so long as the threat to your people exists. I fear we will forget this moment and—
A few dozen of the Rim Knights turn their heads to look back toward the city. A smudge appears in the distance. It seems to be a lone man, flying our way at breakneck speed. How did he pass through the grey cordon without molestation? I clear my throat.
I fear—
More knights are turning now. Not just turning, murmuring to one another. Furious at the ritual's interruption, Gaia signals two of her enforcers. They bellow for silence. No one listens. Some of the knights go so far as to stand and point. The onrushing man is close enough now to see the color of his flapping cloak and armor. They are grey. Storm grey. My core knights frown in confusion and finally turn to follow the gaze of the Rim Knights. Shouts of, "Storm! Storm!" come from the Rim Knights. Soon they are not alone. My own knights of the corps join the rising chorus as the man flies over their ranks. They rise with a roar. It is Diomedes. I can barely believe my eyes. His black and gold hair streams behind him in the wind. His broad face is pale and hard. He survived! Somehow his escape pod made it through. He's alive. My heart swells with relief and joy.
By Jove! He's alive! Cicero crows. The mad bastard survived Kallikki somehow.
The knights, solemn and fixed on the battle to come only moments ago, erupt into mania as Diomedes lands in their ranks. The Ganymedians and Ionians swarm him with so many kisses and embraces that Diomedes has to shove his way through the throng. Only Gaia remains on her knee. She stays there until Diomedes trudges up. He glances at me with a hard smile, and then back to his grandmother. His eyes soften when he sees she is sobbing. He falls to his knees and wraps his big arms around the old woman. Together, the two weep, and I stand there elated, but wondering. I am at a loss for words.
"Smile, man," Cicero says, and jostles me. "Look at the rim. They're champions back. They'll fight like dauntless gods."
"Yes," Pallas says from his side, far more thoughtful. "Smile, Lysander." I wait for Diomedes to pull back from his grandmother's embrace. He doesn't seem eager to do so. It's the old woman who finally pulls away. Cupping his face in her hands, she kisses him on the brow.
"You live, my darling, my little storm."
"Thanks entirely to Lysander," Diomedes says, and nods to me.
I return the nod. Still baffled. He lifts his voice so the commanders can hear him.
"Apologies. I am late. I answered Loon's summons with all haste. I did not want to miss the battle."
He turns to me, stern, and shakes my hand. His armour is standard Dominion kit and, like his cloak, recently painted grey.
Salve, Lysander. I thought you dead at Kalliki.
And are you? Your pod made it through the battle. A miracle.
Apparently we're both hard men to kill, he says.
How did you survive? I ask, and realize our stories will not match up. Those discrepancies may prove troublesome.
Impacted on a hull, floated in space, nearly froze to death. Enslaved by scavengers, chased by obsidian. Boring stuff, until I saw your broadcast, he says. Grandmother, I wish we had more time, but battle is near, and I don't wish to slow the army.
He grips my arm.
Something is wrong.
Wrong?
Your kit. You saved my life. You have kept your word and protected the Garter. When you fight our foe, you should be carrying the shield of Akari.
He grins. I am stunned.
Come.
My Praetorians follow along as Diomedes and I fly east of Plutus. He touches down in the high gardens etched into the side of a dormant volcano. I land next to him in the grass, before a discreet door in the stone. He removes his helmet and breathes in the air. It still smells of smoke, but notes of cherry blossoms and citrus cut through the lingering stench of battle. We head for the shrine, and my Praetorians follow. He turns with a frown.
Only golds are allowed inside.
Of course. Kyber, Marcus, wait here. Kyber obeys, but Marcus's eyes narrow. I fall in with Diomedes.
I feared many of your relics would be stolen in the sack of Io, I say. It is not always good to draw attention to precious things, he replies,
and spits on the door. He smiles at my expression. The door does not open, but another one does, 10 meters to the right. I follow Diomedes through. The sanctum is cold and lit with green globes. Somewhere water rushes. Diomedes leads me through an antechamber and down a stairwell.
I did not think it proper to ask for the shield until after the threat was gone, I say, growing a little uneasy. Lysander, I have always treated you with respect. Do me that same courtesy, he says.
I stop on the stairs. Diomedes has played me. The shield is not here.
Are you calling me a liar? He replies.
He has stopped as well, beneath me on the stairs, but has not turned around. I have my razor. I could strike him down.
Whatever you heard, I didn't know about Kalliki, about any of this, I say.
Any of what? He asks softly.
Diomedes, say his name. Atlas. You know how I knew it was him in the end. Back on Mercury, when he met us at the theater, he couldn't resist mocking us. Had I a moonbreaker in my palm, I'd shake even the devil's hand with a grin. He is only a mortal man, Lysander. He errs, too.
He looks up at me. His eyes glint in the low light, measuring me.
I know you came out here for unity. That much is clear. You honored our alliance, and you had no knowledge of my uncle's attack on the Dustmaker. After Kalliki, it must have been either Atlas's version of unity or death. If it was not you, he would hand the morning chair to Atalantia. I believe I understand why you chose what you chose.
I feel ashamed, but there's some relief in his words, the incisive fairness.
It's not what you would have chosen, I say.
He smiles.
I would never have been given that choice. I'm not known as a man to compromise. I am working on that.
Have you told anyone else? I ask.
No. It can remain that way, It depends on the outcome of this conversation.
He walks on down. I frown, not understanding.
Honour does not mean I am absent discretion.
I could run. I'm very fast, but so is Diomedes. I doubt he would chase me, even then. He does not need to. He knows I have to follow. So I do. The stairs even lead out to a subterranean garden. Shafts of sunlight lance through the gloom and gather on strange chunks of stone, which glow to spread the light evenly. The room pulses with a bluish-white light. Several indigo rose trees reach for the nearest shaft. The air is fragrant, kind. In the center of the garden lies a stone shrine.
You've had my back. Now I have yours, Diomedes says, and motions me to lead into the shrine.
I walk up the steps. He follows.
The walls of the shrine compose Ionic columns and open. Passing through them into the dimmer light of the shrine, I become aware of a scent. It is a heavy scent. A nostalgic scent.
Wet fur. I'm taken back to that night on the Palatine when I saw a wolf floating outside my window. I step backward. Diomedes forms a wall behind me. Gently, he pushes me forward.
Then I see the shrine's lone occupant sitting on a bench by a white rose tree with a twirling trunk that spears its way through the shrine's roof.
Light lances in from many directions. A broad-shouldered man sits on one of several benches surrounding a central pool before an altar where the shield of Akari lies with a box set atop it. The man sits hunched, his back to us, a black haster around his right arm, a razor around his left. Hearing our approach, he half turns. A pale scar runs down the right side of his hard face. My heart thunders in my chest. My feet slow. My hands grip my razor, and I know how it is Diomedes performed his miracle and survived Kalliki. The man on the bench is Darrow of Lycos.